All right, let's get started this evening on real topics. Daniel chapter 7 is where we're going to be this evening, and we're going to try to get through the entire book, and that would be a good thing because it deals with a particular set of visions that Daniel has chronologically. As I told you before in this study, the book of Daniel is divided into 12 chapters, the first six being historical in nature, although they do have prophecy in them, but generally historical in nature. The second six are prophetic in nature, and that's what we're starting this evening, is the prophetic chapters of the book of Daniel. Well, chronologically, if you were to put it in its right order, it would really be placed between chapters 4 and 5. So it's not in chronological order, just as the books of the Bible are not in chronological order. So don't let that throw you into a tizzy. But meanwhile, here we go in Daniel chapter 7, verse 1. Daniel sets the time in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. That would put this between chapters 4 and 5 chronologically ordered book of Daniel, but we're not worrying about that. So in the first year, Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions in his head upon his bed, and then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. Well, the vision is of four beasts. And, of course, the Bible speaks a lot of beasts, especially the prophetic books dealing with the time of the end. Lo and behold, that's what we're going to be dealing with, is these things that lead up to the time of the end. Well, Daniel in verse 2 spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven strove upon the great sea, and the four great beasts came from the sea, diverse one from another. Well, this business of the four winds, let's spend a minute on these verses and kind of get a grasp on what we're looking at. Daniel said the four winds of heaven strove upon the sea. So the four winds are striving. They're causing uproar upon this great sea that Daniel sees. Well, we need to identify what these things are. Now, of course, you've all been to the ocean or to a lake, or maybe you got a pond or a puddle out in your front yard when it rains. And when the wind blows hard, it strives and causes the water to get into an uproar. But that is not the interpretation. That's not exactly what's going on, because you can find this business of the four winds of heaven in other places of your Bible. We've already determined throughout this study that at this time in the Bible, in this dispensation during the Old Testament, God was in fact intervening and was not directing what people said and what people did, but rather he was intervening in world events in a general sort of way. The rise and fall of kingdoms was at the directing of God. And so you keep that in mind, and you also then understand that God uses his intervention with those world events at this time to bring about a particular result. So when Jeremiah prophesied that it would be 70 years that Babylon would keep Israel captive, God had a little bit of insight, and things just happened to work out that it was exactly 70 years. Isn't that a coincidence? With the four winds, there are some examples. Now, if you read, for instance, Larkin's commentary of Daniel, he'll tell you that the four winds is Satan, and that it's the prince and power of the air. Well, that would be a wrong thing, because Satan is not directing world events. The devil's doing a lot of things, and he deals in doctrines these days. He deals in beliefs, because we're saved by grace through faith. So if he can get you to believe anything other than the saving gospel, that's a good thing for Satan. But Satan is not the one who is doing the striving here. Turn to Jeremiah chapter 49 and along about verse 35, and we find, thus saith the Lord of hosts, behold, I will break the bow of Elam, the chief of their might. And upon Elam, now Elam, of course, one of the Middle East nations, the Arab-type nations. We're going to deal with them quite a bit this evening also. And upon Elam, I will bring the four winds from the four quarters of heaven and will scatter them. So these four winds are going to have an effect, and it's not a giant tornado. These four winds will scatter them toward all those winds, so they will be scattered in every direction, and there shall be no nation, whither the outcasts of Elam shall not come. For I will cause Elam to be dismayed before their enemies and before them. Notice the words. God says, I will cause Elam to be dismayed before their enemies and before them that seek their life. I, God says, will bring evil upon them. You think that evil is only done by mean people? Well, God too can perform evil in your Bible. Even my fierce anger, saith the Lord, and I will send the sword after them till I have consumed them. So you see God actively involved in the punishment of Elam, and he causes that by bringing the four winds of heaven into their midst. Well, God works through men, no doubt about it, to bring about world results in the prophetic program. That's a certainty. As you read the Bible, that's undeniable that God has a hand in, has a hand in the placement of leaders and such through his foreknowledge and is able to work out his plan, his prophetic program through the nations. Looking, if you want to keep a finger in Jeremiah, we're going to be back to chapter 25 pretty soon, but in Isaiah chapter 45, verse 1, thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus. Now, we've been here before during this study. Here's the mention of Cyrus. This is a prophecy about 150 years before the Medo-Persian Empire conquered Babylon, and Cyrus was the one who got the job done. So God says Cyrus was his anointed, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings to open before the two-leaved gates, so on and so forth. So God uses Cyrus, and he was prophesied 150 years prior to his birth and the event happening, that it would be a guy named Cyrus. Oddly enough, isn't that strange how God knew that? Well, back in Jeremiah chapter 25, verse 9, just to belabor the point, behold, God says, I will send and take all the families of the north, saith the Lord, and Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant. Once again, let me remind you that when we dealt with Nebuchadnezzar in the early part of this study, God calls him my servant. And Nebuchadnezzar, by taking Israel, or by taking Judah, rather, captive and trucking them off to Babylon, he was doing the will of God. He was serving God, even though Nebuchadnezzar didn't know God, didn't regard God, he could have cared less about God, didn't even know he was doing the will of God. But that was the will of God that Judah went into captivity, and Nebuchadnezzar made sure that got done. And so God dealt with him as his servant. Well, all's well that ends well, and we'll see that also again in this study. But the great sea, so you see the four winds, this business of the four winds, God's providence working. And there's this business of the sea because the four winds, God's providence, strove upon the great sea. Well, what's this great sea? The only solution to the great sea would be humanity. And you find that out, by the way, in verse 17 of Daniel chapter 7. Because when we start getting to that point, we find that these great beasts, which are four, are four kings which shall rise out of the earth. So the four beasts come out of the earth, not literally, they don't pop up out of the dirt, but they're of the people of the earth. So each of those beasts are represented, that they are actually kingdoms different one from another, which will rise out of the sea of humanity. And Revelation 17, you're not only going to learn Daniel 7 tonight, you're also going to understand Revelation 17 before the evening is over. Isn't that going to be a bonus? I won't even charge you extra. Revelation chapter 17, verse 5, we also see this business of the sea. And he saith unto me, the waters which thou sawest, where the whore sitteth, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. So the sea in the vision is the multitudes of the people of the earth. The four winds is God doing things and his providence, whether for good or for bad on their part, stirring up the pot of the people of the earth. Well, the next thing we see in this vision of Daniel's is the description of the beasts. There's four beasts, and the first beast you're going to find out is Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian Empire. Now, we've already looked at Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian Empire, but God likes to repeat himself and re-explain and make sure you get the point. And so that's exactly what happens, Daniel's vision tonight. Verse 4, the first of the beasts is what we're dealing with, was like a lion. Now, these are going to be odd descriptions, and but they mean things. It's not just arbitrary language. Every word means something in these descriptions, and we're going to find out what they mean. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. So imagine a lion with wings, and big wings, by the way. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth. So the wings were ripped off, and then the lion was lifted off of the earth and made, was on the earth and was made stand upon the feet as a man, made to stand up. So the lion who was on all fours, made to stand upright as a man on 2 feet. And the last part of the verse, the man's heart was given to it. Odd language, until you start to understand what the prophecy is about. Like a lion, which of course you all know is the king of beasts, that represents, if you remember, in Daniel chapter 2, the image where you have the head of gold, and then the chest and arms of silver, and the torso and thighs of bronze, the legs of iron, and then the feet of iron mixed with clay. All these beasts are going to correspond to that image that Nebuchadnezzar saw, that Daniel was able to interpret. And what you're looking at is the lion, which is the head of gold. I know that because of the Bible. Jeremiah chapter 50, verse 17, Israel is a scattered sheep. The lions have driven him away. First, the king of Assyria hath devoured him. There's the first lion. And this last, this Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, hath broken his bones. So Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, is called a lion by Jeremiah in Jeremiah 50, verse 17. Now, most commentaries that you read are going to now tell you that the wings mean that Babylon was able to swoop in with blazing speed, unbelievable speed, and overcome their enemies. I don't know how fast they were. I can't imagine it was all that quick, moving those catapults around and, you know, rolling giant rocks down the dirt and across the sand. That's not what it means. That is not what the wings represent. Rather, it's the spreading influence and power of the kingdom of Babylon. If you would, please, look in Ezekiel chapter 17, and I need to turn there too. Ezekiel chapter 17, I want to give you bonus material that's not in the outline. If you look in verse 1, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, put forth a riddle, and speak a parable unto the house of Israel, and say, Thus saith the Lord God, a great eagle with great wings, long-winged, full of feathers, which had diverse colors, came unto Lebanon, and took the highest branch of the cedar. He cropped off the top of his young twigs and so on and so forth. So here we find this great eagle with great wings at the very top of the tallest tree. He's the top of the heap. Now, if you go down to verse 7 in Ezekiel 17, we also find this. There was another great eagle with great wings and many feathers. And behold, this vine did bend her roots toward him and shot forth branches toward him that he might water it by the furrows of her plantation. Verse 12 gives you the interpretation. Say now to the rebellious house, know ye not what these things mean? Tell them, behold, the king of Babylon has come to Jerusalem, and hath taken the king thereof, and the princes thereof, and led them with him to Babylon. Ezekiel 17 is a direct prophecy about Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian captivity, and the wings represent the far and wide spread of the power and authority of Nebuchadnezzar and the kingdom of Babylon. And that's important because if you remember the image of chapter 2, every time you move down the image from the head of gold, for instance, to the shoulders and arms of silver, every metal became an inferior metal. And then you went into bronze, which was inferior, and then into iron, which is inferior, and then finally into iron mixed with clay, which was the least, the most inferior of the metals. And so what you start with in this vision of the beast is the most precious and the highest exalted, the most widespreading, that the Babylonian Empire. Well, we still have some things in Daniel chapter 7, verse 4 to deal with. He was lifted up from the earth. His wings were plucked. So you see the power taken away. And after that power was taken away, you see that it was lifted up from earth and made to stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart given to it. Now, if you remember in Daniel chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar was told that he was going to lose his kingdom and eat grass as cattle for 7 years. Sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And it was because he was standing around thinking, look at all that I've done and look at how great I am. Well, that came true until the 7 years had passed and Nebuchadnezzar was given new understanding, a heart of understanding. Read with me Daniel chapter 4, verses 33 and 34. We read, the same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from men and did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of the heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, after the 7 years of grazing on grass like some wild animal, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up my eyes into heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. That would be the theme of Daniel, by the way. The recognition of the everlasting nature of the kingdom of God, and that he will rule and reign, and that he controls all the world powers. So you see then every statement in Daniel 4, it's not allegory, it's not pictures, rather it's meaningful commentary about both Babylon and Nebuchadnezzar. The second beast is in fact the Medo-Persian Empire. We know that because Cyrus helped his uncle Darius to conquer Babylon. Darius took the kingship for 2 years. Then Cyrus came in and he became king. But you move on the image of chapter 2 down to the silver breasts and arms. And in Daniel chapter 7, verse 5, behold another beast, a second like a bear, and it raised up itself on one side and had three ribs in the mouth of it, between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, arise, devour much flesh. Odd, until you know what went on. Well, here's what it is. Proverbs 28:15 tells us that as a roaring lion and a raging bear, so is a wicked ruler over the poor people. So the bear image, first of all, conjures up the image of a wicked ruler, not caring about the common man. And that's exactly what the situation in Babylon was. That's the situation in the Medo-Persian Empire. And there's more to it than that, though. The picture of a bear also, when you think of a bear, do you think of something very stealthy and quick and all that? Rather something lumbering, like Yogi Bear, you know, kind of doppy and heavy-footed. Well, the fact of the matter is, that's exactly what the situation was. It was a big army. In a big kingdom. The one side raised of Daniel chapter 7 verse 5. The bear head was raised itself up on one side, and the fact of the matter is the Persian half of the empire was substantially stronger and more powerful than the Medes. So that side of the empire, the bear, was raised up higher than the other side. Then there's this business of the three ribs in the mouth of it, between the teeth of it. And the three ribs really denote the three directions of conquest that were attained by the Medo-Persian Empire. And they resulted in the destruction of many. They did devour much flesh along the way. The kingdoms that were in existence when the Medes and Persians came into power, they destroyed the kingdoms of Lydia, Babylon, and Egypt. And those were all conquered by the Medo-Persians in the three directions. So, like I say, it's not just allegory or flowery language to confuse you, but rather it means some things. If you turn forward in Daniel to chapter 8, verse 4, where we'll be next week, I'm going to answer a question that I was really planning to save until chapter 8, but I think I'm going to have to stick this in there. Daniel chapter 8, verse 4, the business of the goat and the ram. Well, you're going to figure out who the ram is tonight. Because the ram is the Medo-Persians. And the ram was pushing westward, northward, and southward. There's the three directions, the three ribs, so that no beast might stand before him. Neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand, but he did according to his will and became great. So there you go. Now you got to jump on next week, okay? The third beast of the vision is the Greeks, the Grecians. Alexander the Great. You've all heard of him, seen the movie, read the book, all those things. That is signified in Daniel chapter 2 as the bronze belly and thighs. Again, an inferior metal, an inferior kingdom. Verse 6 of Daniel chapter 7, after this, beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. And the beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. There's an odd image if you were to draw that. You have a leopard, but then there's four heads. Not necessarily attached to the leopard, though. It doesn't say that. But there's a leopard, and the leopard has four wings of a fowl. But the beast also had four heads. So what does all that mean? Well, when you think of a leopard, what do you think of? Isn't that one of the fastest moving animals on the planet and is pretty good at dispatching its prey? Well, unlike the 2.5 million man army of the Medo-Persians, so you can now you see what the bear, boom, boom, you know, moving 2.5 million people around. The United States isn't real good at that, doing it quickly. Can you imagine back then? The leopard was much more nimble and fleet-footed. The Greeks came in swiftly and they attacked and did all those things. You also have, and we're going to see that in more detail as we go through this study, but I'm going to leave it at that for now, lest I give away everything beforehand. The four wings of fowl attached to the back of the leopard, what would that be about? Well, take a hint from the wings on the the first part of the vision of the first beast, the lion with the two eagle's wings. You have these great eagle's wings that spread and cover the entire world, a great region. Well, here you have four wings, but they're not of a great eagle, they're a fowl. A fowl would be inferior, a smaller bird, smaller wings, smaller coverage is what you're looking at. You have four wings instead of two, but you have smaller coverage and smaller authority. Conquest by the Greeks was made in all four directions. But unlike the eagle's wings of Babylon, the fowl is inferior in stature and accomplishment. The only thing left of the whole deal is the four heads of the beasts. What were those? Well, you've probably heard this before, and it's true, that the Grecian Empire under Alexander the Great, he died when he was in his 20s, so very young. And after his death, the kingdom was divided among four generals. And I can give you their names. Lysimachus took Asia Minor and Thrace, I guess is how you'd say that, which, by the way, is like Bulgaria, eastern Turkey, that area, okay, north of Israel, and the area that moves toward Greece. There was Secicus Nicator, and he took Syria and Mesopotamia area. Cassander was in Greece. Ptolemy Soter was down south in Egypt, Arabia, Palestine. So these four generals divided up the kingdom. Notice, though, that the kingdom is all around, is the Middle East. That's what this whole business deals with, is the Middle East. And you wonder why there's so much uproar there now. There's been uproar there for thousands of years. Well, the fourth beast, then, is the iron legs of the image in Chapter 2, and that is the Roman Empire. Daniel says, verse 7, after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth that devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. Well, three of the 10 horns become uprooted by an 11th little horn, and you see that in the next verse. We'll get into the horns. Daniel chapter 7, verse 8, I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn, that would be the 11th horn, were eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things. So you got 10 horns, an 11th horn comes along, plucks up three of them, and this 11th horn, he's got eyes like a man and he's speaking great things. Okay? So after the vision of the four beasts, the second part of the vision begins. Daniel chapter 7, verse 9 says, I beheld till the thrones were cast down. Now that would be the thrones of the four beasts, by the way. And the Ancient of Days, in case you didn't realize that's God Almighty, did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was like a fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. I'm not going to get into Ezekiel and all the fire and the wheels and all that. But meanwhile, a fiery stream, verse 10, issued and came forth from before him. Thousands, thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were opened. Well, God's fixing to have a judgment day of some sort. But which one is a good question? Because I can think of more than one. I can think of when we meet the Lord in the air, and then we stand, you know, we get judged, the body of Christ, stand before the judgment seat of Christ. There's the great white throne judgment, where everybody who's died, a non-believer, gets judged, whether they believed or not, gets judged. Then there's this other judgment. And it happens, by the way, in Revelation chapter 20, and you might want to take a look. Keep a finger in Daniel 7 and look at Revelation 20. When you look at Daniel's vision of the fourth beast, what you're looking at is a beast that covers more than just one period of time. And as a matter of fact, in Daniel chapter 7, verse 7, you see this great beast that stamps the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it. And then you see the business of the 10 horns. Well, the diversity in the 10 horns is a second revival of this first beast. Okay, so the beast is actually, Daniel sees it as one vision, but it's actually a vision that's spread. There's a spread of years between the vision. In other words, the 10 horns were not present when the beast was stamping and breaking in pieces all things. Well, let's look at Revelation chapter 20. Let's look at this judgment business. There's a future judgment of the righteous dead from the tribulation. Those who die in the tribulation and they get to stand before the throne and get judged. Revelation chapter 20, verse 4, and I saw thrones, and they sat upon them, and judgment was given unto them, and I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus and for the word of God, and which had not worshipped the beast, neither his image, neither had received his mark upon their foreheads or in their hands, and they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. So there's the people who are going to live and reign with Christ in the 1,000-year millennial kingdom. Okay? Don't confuse the judgment that Daniel saw with the white throne judgment, because the time line doesn't work. The future beasts is going to be, in fact, the Roman Empire, signified in Daniel chapter 2, the image, which is the feet of iron mixed with clay, and the 10 toes. You can kind of extrapolate. There's 10 horns, 10 toes, all that. And then along with those, there's the little horn. And he's going to get judged and thrown into the lake of fire, the 11th horn that shows up and overthrows the three horns that were already there. Daniel chapter 7, verse 11, Daniel says, I beheld then because of the voice of the great words which the horn spoke. He's talking about this 11th horn. I beheld till the beast was slain, that's the whole beast, and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. So not a happy ending for this fourth beast. Well, you can cross-reference that in your Bible. And if you don't have these cross-references, you probably need them. That goes to Revelation chapter 19 in verse 20. The beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him. Now, the beast of Revelation chapter 19, verse 20, by the way, signifies the Antichrist, the 11th horn. That's what you're looking at in the book of Daniel. This little horn that pops up is the Antichrist. And the beast of Revelation 19 is the Antichrist. And so you can assert the Antichrist was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him, with which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast and them that worshipped his image. These both were cast alive into the lake of fire burning with brimstone. That's the cross reference for Daniel 7:11 right there. Well, the first three beasts, which represent the Gentile nations of all the world, come under the power and authority of Christ in his millennial kingdom. You see, the happy ending is that Christ comes and rules and reigns after these four beasts are done. But the first three beasts, which encompass the entire known world at that time, what you'll see is they're not thrown into the lake of fire, into the burning flame, the same way that the fourth beast is. And you see that in Daniel chapter 7, verse 12. As concerning the rest of the beasts, that would be Babylon, Media Persian Empire, the Grecian Empire. So basically, the rest of the world, all the Gentiles. As concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, so they weren't ruling. But yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. A season and a time. You see that same situation in Revelation chapter 20. So there's your cross-reference, where Satan is loosed after the thousand-year reign of Christ, the millennial reign, where those people that got judged in Revelation, they get to rule and reign with Christ for a thousand years. Well, look in Revelation chapter 20, what happens with the rest of the beasts that Daniel talks about, whose lives were prolonged for a season and a time. Revelation 21, 20 and 1. And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that is the old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years and cast him into the bottomless pit, shut him up, set a seal upon him that he should deceive the nations no more till the 1,000 years should be fulfilled. So there's a 1,000-year reign. And after that, he must be loosed a little season. There's the words of Revelation. So Satan, who you see in Daniel chapter 7, verse 11, who is given to the burning flame, you find him still in the burning flame in Revelation chapter 20. He's down there in the bottomless pit, shut up and sealed until the 1,000 years expire. And then Revelation says he must be loosed a little season. We can pin it down even more than that, by the way, because in Daniel 7:12, he says a season and a time. And as we're going to find out as we go through more of the prophecies of Daniel, a time corresponds to a year. A season, there are how many seasons in a year? Four, so about 3 months, so 15 months, somewhere in that neighborhood. So a season and a time, about 15 months. After the 1,000 years, then, Satan wages war against Christ. You see this in Revelation 20, verse 7. So those who tell you the 1,000-year of the reign of the millennial reign of Christ is the all in all are wrong. Those who combine the New Jerusalem coming down out of heaven during the 1,000-year millennial reign, like Jack Van Impe does, are wrong. Because there's a timeline here and things have to happen. After the 1,000-year millennial reign of Christ, where you have these Gentile nations and they're matriculating for 1,000 years. But meanwhile, Christ is sitting on the throne on Mount Zion. Israel and the 12 apostles are ruling over the 12 tribes, and Israel's the head and not the tail. They're the preeminent nation on the earth. And any kind of insurrection or any dissent that's going on is being dealt with swiftly by Christ with a rod of iron. At the end of that 1,000 years, you find Revelation 20 and 7, when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison. That would be the bottomless pit. That would be the burning flame of Daniel 7:11. And he shall go out to deceive the nations. Which nations? That would be those, the rest of the beast of Daniel 7:12, the Gentile nations. And he's going to gather them together. The nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. So you see, by that time, after 1,000 years, there's a lot of people on the earth. And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about. That would be Israel, Zion, Jerusalem, the beloved city. The fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. Now, that's not nuclear weapons. That's God shooting fire out of heaven and devouring every last one of them. Over and out, story done. Just like that. God's able to do those things. Isn't that amazing? He doesn't need nuclear weapons. And verse 10, the devil that deceived him was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the prophets are. Or the beast and the false prophet are. So you saw the beast and the false prophet in the bottomless pit. You saw the beast and the prophet, and they get thrown into the bottomless pit in chains. And now Satan also gets to join them. And they're tormented day and night forever and ever. Well, the new heavens and new earth, they happen with the eternal kingdom after the 1,000 years, after the uprising of the Gentile nations who are deceived by Satan. And that is what the context of Daniel 7:13 and 14 is. Daniel says, I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him, and there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom that all nations and languages should serve him. This dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. You see that also in Revelation 21, verses 1, 2, and 3, when the New Jerusalem comes about. I saw a new heaven, John says, and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. John saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. So now you know who the bride of Christ is. And I heard a great voice out of the heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. So you have the end of the prophecy. That's the end of the prophetic program right there. The redemption of the earth, the conquest of the earth, the dominion on the earth. Meanwhile, we still have the book of Daniel, don't we? And we still have 21 minutes. That's a good thing. Daniel chapter 7, verse 15 deals with the explanation of these visions. Even more so than what I just gave you. Daniel 7:15, I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near unto one of them that stood by. Wonder who was standing by. An angel, probably. And asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made known the interpretation of all things. So here it comes, straight from the mouth of those who know. The four beasts represented the four kingdoms from the time of Daniel, not from the time of all history. You got to have that straight in your mind. Daniel is dealing with current events forward. He is in Babylon. That's the current event. So from there forward, there's four kingdoms, four beasts, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and the Roman Empire. That Daniel asked, said, these great beasts, which are four, are four kings which shall rise out of the earth. So they're four kings with four kingdoms. But, verse 18, the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. So that's the end of the story again. So the Reader's Digest version is what you're just given. The four beasts, four kings, and with their kingdoms. They have dominion on the earth, but the Most High and His saints are going to wipe them out and possess the kingdom forever and ever and ever. Well, the fourth beast in this whole story, in this whole business, is without a doubt the most difficult to understand. And it's without a doubt the most widely misunderstood. If you're amillennial and you think that prophecy has all been fulfilled and that we're living in the kingdom and that you've got to make a timeline throughout history, what you have to do is take the time times and a half a time of Daniel, which is 1260 days, and turn that into a day is like a year with the Lord, and make it 1260 years. And then you have to arbitrarily find some events that are going to correspond to the events that Daniel talks about, and arbitrarily set a date when Napoleon comes and tosses the Pope out of France in 1798. And so you say, well, that was the end of that. And since then, things have been getting better. And the Popes no longer have rule and reign over all the world. And they're no longer, crushing the people in the Dark Ages and all that. So you got to back up to whatever that amounts to, 576 AD or whatever it might be. And then they come up for all kinds of excuses. And meanwhile, like I said before, you have the ten kings, the ten horns, which represent ten kingdoms, and they have everybody but the Hatfields and McCoys, the Roman Empire divided into all these different groups, and stories are told. There's a lot easier way to figure this out, and that's by the Bible. Using the Bible to interpret the Bible, you're going to have trouble going wrong every time. Okay, so the fourth beast. Difficult to understand, but not too difficult to understand. It's divided by the image that we saw in chapter 2. You have the legs of iron and the feet mixed with iron and clay. And the feet mixed with iron and clay are different than the legs of iron. And it just so happens that the feet mixed with iron and clay have the 10 toes attached to them. So what you really have is the same beast, but two different manifestations. One, the iron beast. The next, the iron mixed with clay, which includes the 10 toes. Okay? The legs of iron, that was the Roman Empire already passed. That was the one that was in existence that conquered the Grecian Empire. It was in existence at the time of the Lord's earthly ministry. Okay? That's the legs of iron. The feet of clay with the 10 toes, the iron and clay with the 10 toes, that is a yet-to-come future Roman Empire. It has not gotten here yet. The Roman Empire passed. It devoured and destroyed the remnants of the first three kingdoms. And you read that in Daniel chapter 17, verse 19. Then I would know the truth, Daniel says, of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, whose teeth were of iron and his nails brass, he which devoured, break in pieces, and stamped the residue with his feet. Well, he destroyed all these other kingdoms, the residue, stomped them out and took over the whole world. But the Roman Empire future, at the time of the tribulation, will be that iron, clay, mixed, and it will be a confederacy. We'll see that very shortly. That will have power until the Lord Jesus Christ comes back to rule and reign for the thousand-year millennial reign. Okay? So you can't make the two the same. The legs of iron are different. Although they're the same Roman Empire, it's a different time of the Roman Empire than the feet of iron and clay. Daniel chapter 7 verse 20 deals with these feet mixed iron and clay. And of the 10 horns that were in his head, now you see where the 10 toes come in, the 10 horns that were on his head, and of the other which came up, there's the 11th horn which comes up, and before whom three fell, so three of the 10 get overthrown by the 11th that comes up. Even of that horn, that would be the 11th, that had eyes and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows, I beheld, and that same horn, there's the 11th horn, made war with the saints and prevailed against them until a particular time. We've heard this story before already this evening. Until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. So what you're seeing here is until the Lord comes back to rule and reign, this 11th horn is raising havoc. And he's able to make war with the saints, Israel, and he's winning. Okay? The explanation is again in two parts. First, the Roman Empire that conquered the world passed. And that's Daniel chapter 7, verse 23. Daniel goes back and forth because Daniel does not have clear vision of the timeline of events, and will tell you as much in this study. But so you have to look at Daniel through our knowledge, which is the book of Revelation, and see the things that are happening. And then you can understand Daniel perfectly. But meanwhile, in Daniel chapter 7, verse 23, Daniel jumps back to the Roman Empire past. And then he said, "The fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down and break it in pieces." And that's exactly what happened. That's already said and done with. The second part of the Roman Empire is future. And there's, along with the Roman Empire, there's a 10-king confederacy that has power over the extent of the people of the first three kingdoms. That would be Daniel chapter 7, verse 12. That would be the three kingdoms of Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece. So all that whole area over there, Middle East, Asia Minor, okay? So you have this revived Roman Empire, the feet of mixed iron and clay, with the 10 toes attached to it, which is a 10-nation confederacy. How do we know that? And how do we know who these ten kingdoms are? Well, Daniel chapter 7, verse 24, the 10 horns out of this kingdom, that's the kingdom of, that's the Roman Empire, the iron mixed with clay, the feet. The 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise. And another shall arise after them. So there's an 11th horn. And he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings. So once again, you see the same information. Well, who in the world are these 10 kings? Any guesses? There's been guesses aplenty over the ages, haven't there? And the latest thing that you've heard probably is it's 10 nations of the European Union. And when they got to 10, you know, there's all kinds of people sweating bullets when they, you know, when they were putting the European Union together and they were trying to get that all settled, and then they finally settled on the euro as the common currency, and oh, you know, and we got UPC symbols, and now we got computers with scanners, and you know, all these other things, and they admitted the 10th nation, and everybody's holding their breath. Ah! No breath holding needed. Turn to Psalms chapter 83. Turn to Psalms 83. I thank God on a daily basis that He is so much smarter than I am and is able to give us the information that we need. And so we don't have to guess at these silly things. You're going to have a Roman Empire, which is going to encompass a great deal of territory. And, by the way, it's going to have its headquarters in Rome. That's Europe. But meanwhile, this 10-nation confederacy is, in fact, an Arab confederacy. Read with me, Psalm 83:1. "Keep not thou silence, O God, hold not thy peace, and be not still, O God, for lo, thine enemies make a tumult, and they that hate thee have lifted up the head." They have. So it's the lifting up of the head of the Roman Empire. That's what that's all about. "They have taken crafty counsel against thy people, and consulted against thy hidden ones. They have said, 'Come, let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may no more be in remembrance.'" Who have you heard say that lately? Ahmadinejad, of all people. Yeah, he's quoted that scripture. "And they have consulted together with one consent, and are confederate against thee." And then the Bible tells you who they are. "The tabernacles of Edom, of the Ishmaelites, of Moab, of the Hagarenes, of Gabal, Ammon, Amalek, the Philistines, the inhabitants of Tyre, Asher has joined in with them, and they've holpen the children of Lot," children of Lot being the Edomites and the Ammonites, I believe, those two. There's 10 nations in there. God tells you who the 10-nation confederacy is. Guess what it is? It's the Middle East Arab nations. What a surprise. Read your newspaper. Who would have ever guessed that sooner or later they're all going to gang up with someone who has military might and come against Israel? Because they're no more in love with Israel today than they were last week. Well, the little horn, so now you got that problem solved. The little horn, this 11th horn, this is another king, different from the 10. That's because he's the Antichrist, son of Satan. As Jesus was son of God, Antichrist will be, in fact, son of Satan in the very same way. This will be the guy who does probably have a human mother and Satan as father, the same way that Mary was Jesus' mother. The Holy Spirit was the father. Satan, the great pretender and the great imitator. Well, here comes the Antichrist, overthrows three of these 10 kingdoms listed, and God doesn't tell you which 10, by the way, that I know of. Maybe I'll find it one of these days. But the Antichrist will blaspheme God and persecute Israel. Aren't we told by Paul in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 that he's going to enter in and proclaim himself into the temple and proclaim himself to be God? So that's what that's all about. Daniel deals with that too, by the way. So we'll get to that sooner or later. But meanwhile, Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, this 11th horn, this Antichrist, he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given unto his hand until a time, times, and the dividing of time. There's time, 1 year, times 2 years, that's 3 years, and the dividing of time, half a year, 3.5 years. And the saints of the Most High, Israel, will be given to, for the Antichrist will be hunting them down and winning for 3.5 years. Okay? So that's what's going to be going on. And this whole business of the beast and the 10-nation confederacy. Well, the vision of Daniel is further explained in the book of Revelation, chapter 17. You need to turn there. Because now you're going to understand, I hope with pretty good clarity, at least one chapter in the book of Revelation. And that would be chapter 17. Verse 1, and there came one of the seven angels which had seven vials and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters. Well, at this point, we don't know who the great whore is. But, verse 2, the great whore with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So, the powers that be among the governments of the world, plus the people, have followed right along with the great whore. So, verse 3, he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-covered beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns. Okay, so there's a beast. Seven heads, 10 horns, a woman sits on it, and it's names of blasphemies all over. The woman in these verses represents the Babylonian mystery religion, and I would tell you of Rome right now. It's the Roman church. It's this Roman mystery religion that has permeated and infected the entire world. And you'll see that that is exactly who it is. Revelation chapter 17, verse 4, the woman, this is the one full of blasphemies, was arrayed in purple, regally, and in scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls. By the way, did you know, the last I saw of the accounting of the Bank of the Vatican, they have their own bank, and they had in their Bank of the Vatican $784 billion. That was as of 2003. So what it is now, I don't know. I haven't gotten my statement lately. But there's precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. You're going to get the idea that God doesn't think very highly of the Roman church. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great. So there's exactly where it all started, back with Nimrod in Babel, and this business of Nimrod worship, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. It's a religious system, and God ain't real happy with it. You can just kind of figure that out from the language. Well, you have, of course, the murderous history of Rome, do you not? Through the Dark Ages, what, between 40 and 60 million people murdered by Rome. The history of the Roman Church, as bloody as it is, it's only a foretaste and a small sampling of what is yet to come. Because we know by our Bible that two-thirds of the earth, the people of the earth, are going to perish during this time of tribulation. So that's, what are there, 7 billion people, just about, on the earth? Whatever two-thirds of that would be, 4.5 billion people. That's a bunch. And a lot of grave digging going on. So there's going to be a lot more. And in Revelation chapter 17, verse 6, I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints. Huh, imagine that. And with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. So here you have a religious system who is persecuting the saints and is drunken with their blood. The woman and the beast, which would be the last Roman Empire, get explained then in verse 7 of Revelation 17. The angel said unto me, Wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath 7 heads and 10 horns. Well, if you're dispensational, especially mid-ax dispensational in your belief system, then you understand that in Acts chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, what you were looking at during that time was in fact the beginning of the 7-year period of tribulation, that when Peter announces in Acts 2, this is that which was spoken of by the prophet Joel, and those events start to come to pass. But the tribulation did not play out. But meanwhile, the players were in place. And although you could make a good case for Saul, who became Paul, our apostle, as the Antichrist, and I have taught that before and made the case for him, my guess would be that the Antichrist himself was probably Herod. Had the tribulation played out, that was probably who it was, and I only go by that because of the Bible. But meanwhile, let me give you Revelation chapter 17, verse 8, the beast which thou sawest. Now, notice the language. John says, the beast that thou sawest was, so it used to be, and is not, that as John wrote Revelation, it was not at that time. And shall ascend out of the bottomless pit. Well, we've already seen that that Satan and the beast and the false prophet, they're in the bottomless pit. They come out of this, or they come up out of this out of the bottomless pit and do their deeds during the time of the tribulation. So it's something that was not when John wrote this, but will be again, and then they go into perdition, that they may dwell on the earth, that those that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was, and is not, and yet is. Okay? Well, that phraseology right there holds true today. It was, it is not, and yet is. It will be. Okay? How can I say that? Turn to Acts chapter 12, and you'll see what was going on. I told you that in the first parts of the book of Acts, there's every indication, and I can't see that there's any disputing it, that we're looking at the beginning of the time of the tribulation, the 70th week, because the 69th week ended with the crucifixion of the Lord on Calvary's cross, which begins the 70th week, and that's what we're dealing with here is Daniel's 70th week. Acts chapter 12, verse 21. If you remember the beast that was diverse from the others, the horn that was diverse from the others, what would have made him diverse? That would have been the indwelling of Satan. And here we find Herod on verse 21. He sat, and upon a set day, Herod, arrayed in royal apparel, sat upon his throne and made an oration unto them. And the people gave a shout, saying, it is the voice of a god and not of a man. Well, you can tell that I'm not the voice of a god. But apparently this guy had a supernatural indwelling. So that would be the one that was, as John wrote what he was writing. And is not, then John wrote. Remember, it was, but is not. Look at the next verse, Acts 12:23. And immediately the angel of the Lord smote him because he gave not God the glory, and he was eaten of worms and gave up the ghost. So he was not anymore. But he shall, that beast shall again ascend. And we're back to Revelation chapter 17. Verse 11, the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth and is of the seven and goeth into perdition. So here this last beast, this last antichrist, this last last beast, I guess, he is the eighth, but he is of the seven. Well, where did we get the seven? Remember, we had the seven heads on this business of the beast with the seven heads and the ten, the ten horns. Revelation chapter 17, verse 3, that carrying the harlot, the mother of harlot. So you have a beast, and he is the eighth, but he is of the seven, and goeth into perdition. Well, the makeup of the future Roman Empire, the seven hills of Rome being the seat of the mother of harlots, so you can kind of pretty much figure out where that's at geographically, and the Babylonian mystery religion. You find that out in Revelation 17, verse 9. Here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. So you have the seven heads. They're seven mountains. The beast is going to be the eighth. And, I think I'm kind of getting ahead of myself in Romans 7:11. But the woman, verse 18 in Revelation 17, the woman which thou sawest is that great city, Rome, which reigneth over the kings of the earth, because it's identified as such. Oddly enough, the Roman church is going to be hated by the Muslims, by the Arab people. Look at Revelation chapter 17, verse 15. And he saith unto me, the waters which thou sawest where the whore sitteth, that's the church, the harlot church, where those people sitteth are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues, and the ten horns which thou sawest upon the beast. Now these are going to correspond to the ten horns which we saw in Daniel, the nations of Psalm 83. The ten horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore. So the Arab Muslims hate the whore, the mystery Babylon Roman church. Imagine that. And the Pope and all that thing. And shall make her desolate, naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. Well, no love lost there. Verse 17, for God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will. Notice this too. It's not that God tried to hold them back from destroying the Roman church. God hath put in these Arab Muslims' hearts to destroy them, to fulfill his will by destroying the Roman, the whore of Babylon. And to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast, that's this 11th horn, until the words of God shall be fulfilled. You have seven kingdoms. Look at Revelation chapter, let's back up a little bit. Revelation chapter 17, verse 10. I want you to understand this imagery. Revelation 17, verse 10. There are seven kings, five are fallen, one is, the other is not yet come. When he cometh, he must continue a short space. Seven kings, five are gone, one was present, the other's not yet come. The next verse, and the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, but he is of the seven. And he's the one that goes to perdition. He's the Antichrist. Well, who are these seven kings? Remember I told you when Daniel had the vision of the four beasts, he dealt with the time contemporary with him, Babylon till the end of time. So you had Babylon, Media Persia, Greece, and then Rome. four beasts. John is dealing with all human history in the book of Revelation. So you have to back up to get the seven kings. That five are fallen, and in their order, Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, then Media Persia, and the Grecian Empire. One is present, that would be the Roman Empire that was present in the time of the writing of the book of Revelation, and one is not yet, one is future, that would be the future Roman Empire, the feet of iron mixed with clay with the ten toes. Is it coming together? Is the picture coming together between the two? And the timeline and all these things. Daniel deals with from Babylon forward. John deals with from the creation of the earth forward. Once you get to Babylon, they match up perfectly. The only thing John deals with prior is Egypt and Assyria, the two world kingdoms prior to Babylon. Okay? Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Media, Persia, and the Grecian Empire, at the time of the writing of Revelation, had all fallen. Rome was contemporary. Now we can say that they've fallen. So six of the seven are gone. Seven of the seven are gone. And the only one future is the future Roman Empire. So six of the seven are gone. The only one yet to come is the future Roman Empire. Well, the Antichrist, which is the little horn that Daniel speaks of, comes out of that future Roman Empire. And you see that, again, Revelation 17:11, the beast that was and is not and is, even is the eighth and is of the seven and goeth into perdition. So understand that. The ten kings are those that were mentioned in Psalm 83. Look at Revelation 17:12-13. John mentions those ten Arab nations, confederate nations, aligned with Rome. The ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings, which have received no kingdoms as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind. The ten kingdoms and the beast have the ten kingdoms with the ten kings have one mind. So the Arabs' confederacy is all of one mind. They shall give their power and strength unto the beast. Where's their power and strength lie, by the way? If you were to pick any one thing today, what would you say would be the power and strength of the Arab nations right now? Oil? I would say so too. So they're going to give their power and strength unto the beast. That'll put a whole new perspective on world events at that time, won't it? Be making a few people mad. If you do a study of the book of Revelation, this is not in your outline, but if you do a study of the book of Revelation, when you find the 200 million man army coming across the Euphrates River from the east, there's very few nations in the world that could field that size army. One of them is China, and China just happens to be extremely dependent and growing more so each and every minute that we speak on oil, which these ten Confederate Arab nations are going to give to the beast. And so a lot of the world resources, hey, what are battles about? What are wars fought over? Territory and resources. And no one's fighting over Antarctica because there's no resources. So when it comes down to brass tacks, it's resources. And that's going to be a lot of the issue at the time of the end. All right, let's finish this up. Christ will end the Antichrist war and destroy all who follow after the Antichrist. You see that in Daniel 7:26-27. That the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it until the end. That's God doing the judging, the dominion of the Antichrist and of the beast. It will be consumed and destroyed until the end, and the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. That's the same conclusion we come to at the end of Revelation chapter 17, by the way, in verse 14. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. So you have the identical events in the book of Daniel chapter 7 and Revelation chapter 17, they match up perfectly. The end of Daniel's first vision of chapter 7 troubled him, by the way, because he did not have full understanding, and this, excuse me, says so. Verse 28, the last verse of the chapter, hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cognitions much troubled me, and my countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart. Next time we'll take a look at chapter 8 and see about Daniel's further visions on this whole matter.